welcome to the latest episode of the Dialogue Out Loud series. I'm Charlotte Hanson-Terry, one of the Personal Voices editors for Dialogue, a Journal of Mormon Thought. Today, we are excited to speak with Stephanie Kilpatrick about her Personal Voice essay in the winter 2025 issue. Stephanie Kilpatrick has a BA in English from Brigham Young University. She is a member of three writing organizations: Latter-day Saints in Publishing, Media, and the Arts, Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, American Night Writers Association, and she serves as chapter president for the latter two. She has three fiction short stories published: Sister's Keeper in 2023, Together at Trafalgar in 2024, and Earthcraft in 2025. She just had an essay published in a literary journal on Hemingway, and she has also won two awards from the annual Writer's Digest competition for personal essays. Stephanie's piece in this issue is titled Sneaking to Church in Saudi, and there are five personal voice essays in the winter 2025 issue, and we're glad that we're able to have one of the authors with us today to talk about this piece. So to start, Stephanie, can you tell us more about your background and what has drawn you to the work that you do?
I did not actually grow up writing and liking English in high school. Like most writers, they're like, oh, I just wanted to write from forever. I hated it. I hated English. I think we had to write a short story once my freshman year, and I got like a C on it. And I was like a straight A student, and I was like, oh, English is dumb. And so I just never really... It was when my middle child was, he was in that learning to read phase, and we were just kind of struggling finding books for him that were in that perfect reading level. And then I got this idea, but I didn't know how to write it because I didn't know much about writing at that time. I like to read, which is a good prerequisite for writing. So that's how I found... I was talking to a friend about it, and she was part of the ANWA writing organization. And so I got into that. And then like once I got into that doorway of the writing world of the community, then it was just learning and learning and classes and conferences. And I loved it. And I found my people and I found my tribe. And I was like, why didn't I give English a shot in high school? I love this. So that's kind of how I got into writing. So was from like that looking at a children's fiction book idea, which has still never... it was my learning book that I had to learn all the writing and rewrite it over and over, and then I got sick of it. but I really liked when I went back to school to do English, and I really liked the creative nonfiction that we did and learned about. And so when I had these experiences living abroad and doing things like that, I would have these little ideas for things, and I'd write them down. And so I have a few, and I have like ideas in the back of my head of things I would like to write eventually when I have like more time. But yeah, right now I've got all sorts of ideas, and it's hard for me to figure out exactly. I just, you know, a lot of authors go into their niche and they stay there, but I've got like a middle grade horror that I'm working on, and then like essays, and I don't know. So you just like to write what you can and follow the inspiration.
I think that's really great how many different styles of writing you're really liking and having that variety. I think that actually is really great to hear, right? Because of these ideas of, it doesn't mean you have to just stick with one thing to enjoy writing either. So that's really nice.
And I think they help each other. Like when I was taking the creative nonfiction writing, at that point I had already been really deep into the learning fiction writing, and I had already published one of the things, I think. And so that part of the nonfiction writing came really easily to me. It was like, okay, like just putting in that creative, like using analogies, using your senses, like how to use your words and how to structure it and tell it like a story. And so I think it's good to learn all of those different ways of writing, because they all kind of help each other and they build. And anyways, And I'm not done. I'm like, I've got ways to go, I'm sure. Like, I'm always going to conferences and trying to learn more and do better.
It's like, again, don't we all though, long. Really? Huh? Like, don't we all though? It's always good to keep learning. So
yes.
Well, leading off of that, can you talk to us more about what led you to write this particular essay? You kind of hinted at it a little bit already. So if you could talk more about what led you to write this specific one and what that process was like for you to work on this piece as well.
Yeah, so we had the opportunity to live in Saudi for 2 years, and it was during COVID, so it was hard. But I had never lived out of the country. I mean, we lived in Canada for my husband's job for like 6 months once, but this is like the Middle East. I'm like, I never thought in my life that I would be living over there. But we're like, let's do it. You know, we had, our kids were young. I think our oldest was going to be in, he was in middle school, like seventh or eighth grade. So none of them were in high school yet. So we're like, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it now while they're younger. And then we can travel and see the world, because that was part of the perks of doing it, was the traveling and seeing things. And it was a very culture shocky. I mean, we had to research and learn and, you know, meet with people from his work to kind of prepare us. So we knew going in. But that's just even from our culture, not even our religious culture, just an American woman culture going into this Islamic culture where women are like, you know, you don't, the guys do everything. And then on top of that, like then the religious aspect of it, it was a lot to like just get used to and figure out how to not offend anybody. And like where I remember one time, my kids went to the American International School. So I kind of thought, well, it's kind of American, but it's not really. It's still like all Saudi. And they had told us that the kids were going to do online school for the first couple months or few months, whatever it was when the school year started, but that they would be going back like November or something. So I had that date on my calendar because it was not working. The kids would just be like surfing YouTube all day, and I'm like, stop it, go back to your class. And so I remember the day came, and like the day before, they're like, oh, well, never mind, we're gonna just keep you online school because I don't know, some excuse. And literally 2 days before, the country had just relaxed like social distancing because the numbers were going down and all this stuff. So there was no, like, it made no sense. So I was frustrated because I'm like, it's so expensive, this international school. And so I like posted something in the, everyone over there uses WhatsApp for communicating. And so I posted something in like the school WhatsApp group. I'm like, why they lowered restrictions. Like, why is this happening? This doesn't make any sense. Because in America, like I would just ask a question to the school and be like, what's going on? This doesn't make any sense. Like, come on. Like, if you're going to keep doing this, then what's the new deadline? And like, where are we going? Like, what's the plan here? Because this is killing me. And everyone was like, take it down. You're going to like get kicked out. And I'm like, okay. So I like, it's like that wake up call that freedom of speech is not a thing. And, you know, we just live in this habit of freedom that we don't even realize that we have, because it's just part of our culture that we grow up with. And so I had to learn, like, okay, I can't even say things like my opinion, and you have to be careful. And anyway, so that was part of like going to church, was like for me to have to learn. In America, you know, we get told like, share with your friends, invite your friends to church activities, you know, bring them to church, like tell people your faith. And over there it was, do not tell anybody, do not post about it, be careful with anything you say on Facebook or anything, because you know the country can monitor everything. And so it was weird to go from that shift of like, you know, share, to not sharing. And anyway, so I think the idea for this essay came because I remember at one point thinking I was kind of jealous of the country, because there are some things over there that I really appreciated. So their country blocks all pornography, and there's no alcohol anywhere. And I remember feeling kind of a little bit of less anxiety with my kids on the internet, because I'm like, well, it's safer. Like, they can't, whereas here, everything, you know, just jumps at them and they don't even have to be trying to find it, and stuff will pop up on, like, even the ads that are advertised to kids in video games and stuff. And so it was nice over there. I'm like, I didn't have to worry about that. And we could go out to eat and there was no alcohol at restaurants. And so it was just, and I was thinking, well, that would be nice, you know, like, if, like, what would that be like if we had like a culture in our culture that was based on our beliefs, and we didn't have like kind of that safety bubble of like, well, that would be one less thing to worry about. And then so that's kind of what got the wheels turning, because then I was started comparing that to like, but you know, there's a lot of Saudi people who, like, you know, you just hear the stories and them talking about friends, and because it's very much a culture that is easy to live, and you can just do all the things that you're supposed to do, which are also your laws. So like the religious laws are the country laws, and you're being righteous, but really you can just not have any faith. You cannot have any relationship with God, but you would look like you are. And so it was like just kind of that contradiction of like, what would that look like to have this bubble, but then I don't know, like, is that really helpful in the long run, or is it potentially damaging because it forces you, or it doesn't force you to like have your faith, like choose your faith, you know what I mean, because it's just kind of placed upon you. So and I think it was interesting, because the one day we were walking to church, and if you've read it, you know, it's like, we had to like pretend like we had to park far away. We had to stagger our approach. We were like not in our church clothes, and the like prayer towers were going off. And I'm sitting here thinking, this is hilarious to me, because we're in this country where, okay, it's like, oh, it's time to pray. Everybody in the country, everyone go pray. It's that prayer time. And we're like sneaking, like just quietly trying to hide our faith and our religion. So to me, it was just this irony of like, we're like complete opposite ends of the spectrum, like this big vocal countrywide religion versus just this personal small religion. And so kind of all those ideas were mixing in my brain for a little while. And then, you know, started word vomiting them out, and then they turned into an essay. But yeah, that's how that started.
One thing that you were mentioning, and again, I did enjoy reading your essay and kind of thinking about these contrasts you were thinking about, like common culture, which you kind of just talked about, but also you brought up this idea of choice. And I think that's really interesting, this idea of what does that look like to like choosing your faith and how you like create the spaces within your faith. And anyway, that was just something that kind of stood out to me from what you were saying about these ideas of choice too, right? But anyway, that's one reason I enjoyed it. So, so leading off of this, how do you see your piece, for instance, engaging with these larger issues that we see in Mormon studies, or just in scholar, like in other writings that you've seen within this field, or even with other things that you saw on this issue?
I think just in a wider sense, in general, I feel like our world right now is in that really. It's like really divided, and it seems like it's so labeled and stereotyped into, you know, all these categories. And I think when we look at stuff like that, like our religion or our country, it's easy to just, it's comfortable when you find a group, because you're like, yeah, I'm going to be with those people. And then I have a group, and now I'm not alone. But I think it kind of isolates you, like I'm saying, from that bigger picture of thinking and having that, you know, all those outside thoughts and questions that make you ask. Like, I don't think questioning is wrong. I think it helps you. And if you just stay safe in your own little group that mimics everything you say and agrees with everything that you say, you're not going to grow, and it's not going to cement and grow your faith. Because if your faith is outside of that and you have to confront those questions, then it's tested, and it forces you to do the work to find out, okay, like, is this what I really believe? And is this, like, what do I want to do with that? And you have to be responsible for that instead of it being like an outside force that's like responsible for what you do and what you believe. And so that's one thing I really noticed over there, is there was a big, like, they thought, Saudis thought that our form of government was stupid because they like having a king. And we, like, I just went over there as a naive American thinking, oh, they probably are so jealous that we have freedom and that they have a king telling them what to do. And that's not the case at all. And it takes away that responsibility, because they don't have to decide what to do. They just have to listen to the king, and he just tells them what to do. And so in a way, it's easier, because you don't have that, like, accountability in that, like, I've got to figure this out and just make my choices. And it's just, then I do what they tell me. And if something goes wrong, it's their fault, not mine. And so anyways, I just think having that perspective of not bubbling yourself off and being able to, like, listen and have all these different perspectives, and instead of, like, being offended by them, but, like, letting them help you grow and, like, help them to strengthen your faith and test your faith and really figure out. Because I think it'll either you'll figure out, nope, that's not what I think, or you'll feel like, yeah, like, I feel really strongly that this is right. And even though this is hard to follow what I know what is right, I'm going to do it. And then you'll feel that, like, because over there, it was hard to go to church. You had to jump through all these hoops, and you have to be sneaky and quiet. But it was like, there was such a strong spirit and a strong sense of, like, this is good, that like kind of reinforces and builds your faith. And you don't have that experience necessarily when it's easy and comfortable, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm bumbling.
Well, I love what you've just pointed out of this idea of not cordoning ourselves off and isolating in that way, because there is this power in having things tested and challenged and being in conversation, really being more conscious and making those choices about, like, okay, what is it that I value? What is it that I believe? Is this working, and how is it working? And having those experiences, like you talk about in your essay, about, like, being, oh yes, this is something that brings value to my life. I can see that as I make these conscious choices to be committed to this faith or whatever it might be that somebody might be committed to. Yeah. Yeah. So, anything else you wanted to add to that, or?
No, I'm good. Okay, I don't know. I can't remember exactly what the question was, because I just started rambling. So, hey, you got to bring me back in.
So just to kind of finish this up a little bit, what are some other works or projects that you're currently involved in that you'd like to share? At the beginning, I mentioned some other pieces that you published recently, but, you know, I know that you're interested in a lot of different things, and I know our listeners would be interested in hearing about what you're working on.
I've been working on a middle grade horror book for a little while. So I'm hoping this year to finally, like, get that finished. It's more like goosebumpsy, not like horror, because it's for kids. But I actually have a really strong opinion about that, if you want to hear it, because I don't know. There's, like, I have kids. And so I grew up reading Goosebumps and R.L. Stein and, like, Fear Street and all that stuff. And I would watch scary movies. And I don't know, my youngest son, like, we've tried to watch Stranger Things, and only my oldest son would watch it with us. And I'm like, this is such a good show. And anyways, my youngest, who he's in, like, eighth grade, he, like, ran out of the room and put himself to bed. I'm like, what? Like, and that is rare. Like, he's not going to go to bed early, because he's like, nope, I'm done. It's too scary. So I don't know. I think that there's a lot of anxiety and big feelings and all this stuff in the world today. And one of the conferences that I went to talked about this, even, because they brought in, I've kind of felt that horror or confronting scary things as a kid in a safe environment is good, like makes you resilient. And I just kind of had that thought because I'm like, I went through some crap in my childhood, but I came out okay. And I'm like, maybe it's because I liked scary books. I don't know. But then I went to a conference class that was talking all about the science behind it. And it was saying that scary stories for kids are so important because it does. It lets their brain, their brain doesn't know the difference between like a real scary situation and one that you're reading. Because if your writing is good enough, you're like immersed in the story and your brain isn't experiencing it. And it traces those pathways of like going through something scary, processing it and realizing I'm okay. And so then you're kind of creating these pathways so that when in real life they go through something, it doesn't even have to be like traumatic, but it can just be like something that would maybe cause anxiety or discomfort, right? They've got these pathways built. So it's just easier for them to like to deal with like harder things. And so I'm a big proponent for like, read your kids, let your kids read scary stories because it makes them more resilient, like emotionally and mentally. So anyway, so that's why I'm working on a middle grade horror book.
It makes me think about how many classic literature, though, is very much that idea of using like a scary story or something that like many of them are that kind of style. So obviously we have a long history of having that kind of literature, like in many societies, right? So I'm thinking back of like all these classics that I'm aware of in different cultures of like, yeah, that would make sense because it's teaching something specific. So I can see why you're like, yes, I can write.
And it's funny because one of my kids had to do a report on a story from the original like Grimm Brothers tale and like comparing it to some kind of retelling. And I like read it and I was like, oh my gosh, like that someone's head's getting chopped off and people are dying. I'm like, oh, but I mean, my stories aren't that scary. but I think for a lot of historically speaking, we didn't really give children this sheltered childhood that we have in our, you know, modern history. A lot of times they just saw kids as little adults and they just treated them like they should know things. And so, but yeah, I don't know. They were a lot tougher and more resilient back then too. So I don't know. Who knows?
Well, hopefully that means your book, because you finish it up, can be a helpful resource in that way.
We'll see. And then the other day I had an idea for a rom-com and I've never written a rom-com. And I'm like, I have like this whole beat sheet and it's all outlined. I'm like, oh man, I just got to figure out. I just got to finish one thing. So I just get too many ideas and then I want to start them and then I get tired of revising the old things. So that's, anyways, one of these days I'll have a bunch of things that are all ready to go.
That's a great plan.
We'll see.
Well, I'm excited for all of those projects. I hope you get more of them done, especially if they're closer to being done so you can move on to the other ones you're excited about, because that's always a good thing. So, well, again, thank you for joining us today as well to talk about this piece. I encourage our listeners to read this one, check out all the essays in this winter 2025 issue, the Personal Voices essays. You can also find them on our website at dialoguejournal.com. Thank you again to our listeners for joining us today. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and colleagues. We encourage you to get in touch with questions or comments, and we look forward to continuing the discussion on Mormon Studies scholarship and even writing more broadly in general.
Greetings, my name is Rebecca DeSchweinitz, and I'm thrilled to serve as a board member at the Dialogue Foundation and as one of the hosts of Dialogue Gospel Study. In each episode, which we record live the second and fourth Sunday of every month, we welcome esteemed speakers from a variety of backgrounds to share their insights and perspectives on the Come Follow Me lessons. Our aim is to spark meaningful conversations about the scriptures, to connect them to our personal experiences and to our understandings and explorations of the gospel. To stay in the loop with our upcoming lessons and this opportunity to engage with Mormon thought, culture, and belief, be sure to visit dialoguejournal.com and sign up for our newsletter. By doing so, you'll receive updates and timely links to join our live stream lessons. Additionally, you can catch up on our past guests and episodes by subscribing to Dialogue Journal on YouTube, Facebook, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dialogue Podcast Network.